Hello, Bootstrapped FM.
Hello!
Oh, Lord. You know that show, Two Broke Girls?
No.
There's a show called Two Broke Girls. Okay. And they have a neighbor lady. I don't know her name because I don't watch the show, but I have it in the background sometimes. And they have this neighbor lady. And I've only recently realized that she is the actress that played the masseuse on Seinfeld in that episode that he was trying to get a massage.
Really?
And she looks completely different. I mean, it's not just age. I mean, there's some that obviously, but like everybody aged from that show and they're still recognizable, but she's completely different. Let me look it up real quick.
She has, you know, it's been what, over 20 years.
First of all, she looks twice as tall.
Oh yeah, she was tall in the episode. I always remember thinking that. I'm like, she seems really tall.
Let me find it. All right.
Exciting wiki search listening here.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. They'll stick around. All right, here you go. Image gallery thing. Jennifer Coolidge is her name. Anyway, it took me a while to recognize. I didn't. My wife told me that she was the same actress from the
Holy
Sun.
Cow, she looks totally different.
I know.
No, that can't be the
yes,
same.
Yes, that's her same. Wow. I mean, you could put in Seinfeld in that search and you'll find it.
Yeah.
Amazing, isn't it?
Well, you know what it is? She dyed her hair blonde and then that like throws off the whole connecting.
Yeah.
There's also a shot of her where she's this, was in some other show. I recognize her picture in the show, but I can't remember what show it is. Anyway, she was in some other thing that now, like, because I see this picture of her in that show, and so now I'm like, oh, yeah, that's her, but I didn't know that was her when I watched the show.
How do we get on this topic?
I don't know.
Why is this the opening
topic? Because I said hello.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Your fault, then.
I think it's funny, like, all these Seinfeld people, like, a lot of them have gone on to do a whole bunch of other stuff, you know, that you... Some of them you don't even realize were Seinfeld people or whatever, but there's been like all these offshoots of careers from it.
Yeah, the guy that played Walter White in Breaking Bad, right? He was on there as the dentist.
Yeah, he had a recurring role a few times, not a lot of recurring, but a few times.
He's the one that converted to Judaism for the jokes.
That's right. I've been watching that Better Call Saul. You watch Better Call Saul?
No, I haven't watched Breaking Bad yet. So
what? Wait, I just want to be clear.
I haven't watched Breaking Bad.
Ridiculous show called Two Broke Girls.
No, I don't watch that. I play it in the background. You can't watch Breaking Bad in the background. That deserves attention, right? So I have to wait until I get time.
Come on. Now listen, all this game playing, background TV watching, you need to make a little bit of time for Breaking Bad.
Well, did you make a little bit of time to play Gone Home?
I played first time there.
That's 4 hours.
All right, listen. All right, I will play Gone Home if you watch Breaking Bad.
I'll watch Breaking Bad without the conditional, regardless of whether you play Gone Home or not.
we got to do our pop culture podcast, so we got to pivot. We're pivoting from bootstrapping to cultural media.
Lots of stuff happening this week. How was Saster?
Saster.
Tell me about San Francisco. You didn't like San Francisco.
It was growing on me by the end. I think I was in, I was in the downtown part, like the businessy district. And
I've been hearing a lot about from people who live and work in San Francisco that they don't really like San Francisco.
Well, I mean, living there, I think would be very difficult unless you just had a lot of money, because I think there is like, so I couldn't find anything good to eat. That always throws me off in a new city. Like I want to be in a new city and want to have good food that I haven't had before. Right. And I basically had no good food the entire time I was there, except for one little breakfast place I found like pretty late in the trip, and a bakery, a kind of this world famous bakery that was pretty good. But,
so there's supposed to be an In-N-Out burger, right? Which is like my thing that I want to do when I go to the West Coast. Did you have that?
Yeah, I did have an In-N-Out. And that was actually really good. That was, but I don't care. See, that's like fast food. You know what I mean? Like, even though you can't get it here, it's like, that to me is not, that's not, you know what I mean? Like, I want like a unique little restaurant place that just blew me away. Not, In-N-Out Burger, it's fast food, whatever. But for fast food, yes, it was very good.
So the other thing is supposed to be tacos, which is supposed to be like, for them, tacos is like for us, New York.
Really? In San Francisco?
Pizza. Well, West Coast, I mean, I think that area is supposed to have proper tacos.
I didn't see any tacos the whole time.
I heard like there's a place called Del Taco that's supposed to be good. I don't know where that is though.
And let me tell you. All right, so in New York, there's like lots of dumpy eateries, right?
Right.
And, but a lot of times those are good places to eat. But the dumpy eateries in San Francisco are so dumpy, so incredibly dumpy that you just can't go into them. You know what I mean? Like they're just too dumpy. The ones in New York are like, yeah, it's like a little tiny hole in the wall and it's probably kind of dirty, but it still has like some kind of life in it or something. There's just something about them that's...
Right. How does it compare with like the little places in the village or something?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's no comparison. Those places are like 4-star restaurants compared to these places. I mean, it's like you look in these places, it'll be completely empty. There's nothing in the whole place. And there's like one fluorescent bulb on that's just illuminating like a caked on filth on the floor. It's horrible. And I don't know. Again, I think this was a lot where I was. The last day I got into some other parts of the city, which were a little bit better, but I don't know. It was...
Because the places in New York, they're like 8 feet by 4 feet, but they're like decked out. They have like drawings on the wall and like celebrity pictures and like personality and music blasting and like they're done up right.
This is not like that.
This is just meh.
This is places that like you really feel like you're gonna need a shot after you get out. Like you don't want to go in there without being protected. I don't know. A lot of like really dumpy places like that. Like, you know, obviously they have like all fast food stuff and everything, but I don't know, just not. I thought it was going to be like, boy, lots of like interesting little eateries, and there was not that much of that. Again, definitely in the part of the city I was in, but even as I walked around, and a lot of quick transitions of neighborhoods from like okay to like really, really bad neighborhoods. I mean, this is the first time I've been in a city where I took Uber to like the party at Saster.
Right.
And the Uber guy, he lets me out. We went through like an incredibly rough part of town, it looked like, from inside my fancy Uber car here. And he's like, you don't want to walk back. He's like, make sure you don't walk back. You call us. We'll come get you. It's like the Uber guy's warning me. And I'm like, I don't know. Obviously New York has rough parts. All cities have rough parts. But I don't know. It's just I think because San Francisco is such a small place, too. It's like you just transition instantly from a good neighborhood to a bad neighborhood just in like half a block. And so you're like going in and out of these different neighborhoods and stuff. So it's a lot of weird transitions like that because it's kind of packed into that peninsula there. But anyway,
how was the conference itself?
The conference itself was good. I actually picked up a few things I'm implementing that were interesting.
Good. Yeah. That's your criteria for a successful conference, right? One thing to do after the conference.
Exactly. And I got one. Talking to another guy who I knew there. Like I got some ideas for our partner program because we launched this partner program for HelpSpot. So anybody out there, if you're an IT consultant or have a blog or whatever, we have a partner program. You can get to it on the website in the footer. But basically, it's a referral program. And, we were going to do it as like a one-time payment. Like that's how I had it all set up. But after talking it through and thinking about it a little bit more and just talking with this guy, it was like actually ended up being really, really good. And we made it just a recurring thing where if you send us someone who buys HelpSpot and they keep buying HelpSpot year after year, you'll get paid year after year or month after month, whatever plan they're on. So I think that's going to be a good change. So we just got to rolling that out, which is a whole separate conversation we could have. But yeah, so that was like a good thing that happened there. I did totally unrelated to my business, but everything there is like Salesforce, you know, like it's all Salesforce. Any of these bigger companies are all about the Salesforce, integrating with Salesforce, whatever. Selling people stuff on Salesforce, consulting around Salesforce. So Salesforce stock has been taking a beating and they were going to announce results the other day. And so I bought some stock because I was like, everybody's on the Salesforce thing. And I'm up 10%.
That's great.
In like a day.
Sell it.
I probably should sell it. I don't know. But then, you know, it's
like get into day trading, buy a Ferrari, go back to the mid 90s.
Anyway, so that's totally unrelated, but that was kind of another just not the way you should buy a stock at all from just like anecdotal evidence at one conference. But I was like, I'm going to buy some. There you go. But yeah, so that was fine. San Francisco itself, I was warming up to it by the end. Conference was good. I got to fly this JetBlue Mint because we had this credit from a trip we didn't take to Florida. And so I had to use this credit. So I just upgraded myself to this Mint level, which is kind of like a first class that JetBlue does now. So that was
mint
nice.
Mint level?
Yeah, it was really cool. I had like this whole big, I had basically like three, like the equivalent of a whole side of the plane to myself. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
That sounds neat.
That makes flying much nicer.
Mint sounds like something that was named by some of my metalhead friends from high school.
It's like, you know, green and minty fresh.
Yeah.
Apparently they only do it to San Francisco and somewhere else, Los Angeles. I don't know, somewhere like that. So flight out there was good. Flight back, about half an hour out from landing. And it's you're up front, it's all nice, they're giving you nice food, they're giving you hot towels so you can wipe your face, and because you know, you're sophisticated, right? You're in first class. So half an hour out, it starts to get a little bumpy. And the woman in front of me, I'm like in the second row from the front of the plane. Mm-hmm. And then there's a woman and some guy in right in front of me. Because it's kind of weird. It's like two seats and one seat and two seat and one seat on the side of the plane. So I'm in a one seat by myself in the second row. Mm-hmm. Two people in front of me that are kind of split. So it gets bumpy and the woman's like, I don't feel so good. And she throws up on the plane. Mm-hmm. And it stinks in the cabin like throw up. And it's bumpy. And I'm like, everybody in the cabin is like about to throw up with her. And it was pretty rough. I don't know how I didn't throw up because I was really like, eyes watering, mouth watering, like right there. The woman across the aisle from me, I mean, she looked like death. She was just like, oh man, it was a whole scene. The stewardess is trying to help her, but the plane's bumping around, so she couldn't like really, she was supposed to be sitting. So that was a whole kind of crazy, crazy scene of puke everywhere. But
you're in a metal box hurling through the sky.
Yes, exactly.
Pretending to be cushy with hot towels on your faces.
At least it was from being bumpy and not from like, I didn't like catch any throwing up illnesses. So that was good. That's what you always get. I did get sick afterwards, of course, because you always get sick.
Yeah, I had a cold last week too. It's a never ending thing now, ever since Ethan went to school.
Oh, the kids, you can't do it.
Good. So you had fun. Would you go back? Fun.
I saw the Redwoods. Redwoods were awesome. Went out there.
Yeah, you took some pictures.
Took some pictures. Amy Hoy, bootstrapper, friend of ours, she recommended I also go to this, it's like an old arcade. It's like an arcade that collects old games like from early 1900s. That right. place was the best thing I did in the whole trip. So
right.
that was great. All these crazy old games, like a crazy baseball game that was fully mechanical with weights and levers and all this stuff.
This is like carnival stuff, not like yeah. Dig Dug and stuff.
Right. Yeah, but they did have a few electric I guess they're all mostly electric, but they did have a few like modern-ish games, like mm-hmm. early Atari games and things. I didn't actually even play any of those. Those were farther in the back, and I was having too much fun with the... You know, those I can kind of play anywhere. But these were other things were all just like wooden boxes with different sorts of carnival-ish kind of games, I guess. I don't know. I'm not really sure where they would have been. Definitely some of them were carnival kind of things. I don't know if other ones would have been in like bars or whatever. Right. But right. They had these peep show ones that were kind of funny. It was like you put your dime in and it's like three pictures that rotate of someone who's fully clothed, basically.
Right.
Other ones that were the same mechanism, but showed you like history of the 1906 San Francisco earthquake and fire. So that was kind of interesting. But that place was great.
That sounds neat. I like stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. You would love this place. You would really dig it. We get you out there. So that's the summary of my trip. I don't have any like big takeaways from the conference to like share exactly in terms of with the audience. I'm trying to think if there's like a good takeaway. Nothing was really quite compartmentalized like that, but it was more just catching the vibe and then some specific things that were, you know, kind of.
Is this an annual thing? They're going to repeat it?
I think so. They did it last year and they did it this year. It was very VC heavy, obviously. Mm-hmm. But you know what was very interesting about that? Everybody there like wants VC funding or has VC funding. And yet the first three people on the main stage were all bootstrappers, like Atlassian and some other guy who bootstrapped. I forget the deal. So like it was all people who bootstrapped, and some of them have taken money, you know, since then to cash out or whatever, or raised rounds much later. But they were all bootstrappers.
Once companies reach a certain level of success as bootstrapped companies, people tend to forget that they're bootstrapped. Like Microsoft was essentially bootstrapped. People
don't know that. Yeah, and taking money when you're already making millions of dollars is kind of a different thing than the, just I have an idea, give me money sort of scenario. So, because then you just need the money to grow really fast on something you've proven works, which is, you know, completely different from I'm just blowing this money to see if my idea works. So,
cool.
Yeah, that part was quite interesting.
Where are you off to next?
I don't know. I think in Piers Conf in April. Are you going to that? Have you decided?
I haven't decided yet.
That's in Florida. I think that's the only other thing I have currently.
Were you going to go to the one in of Pennsylvania, the one where Stallman is at?
No, I can't because we're on vacation. We already are on vacation, summer vacation. Okay. We already have everything booked. So I would like to go to that. That one seemed pretty interesting. And I like Pittsburgh a lot. And I would actually really like to go to that, but it's impossible, so I cannot go.
All right.
But I'll be going to Laracon in July. Like this summer, I don't know, we're doing like we are a vacation, Laracon, which we're going to drive to and bring the kids. So that's going to be a whole crazy scene of like 12 hours of driving because it's in Louisville. And I don't know, we might do some other stuff in New York City. I don't know yet. We were thinking about staying a couple days down there and doing some stuff, but that's my travel schedule. Everybody's now. what have you been? What's been going on in your world? I got a few other things to actual interesting stuff to discuss. But what's been going on with you?
So last week, 2 weeks ago, yep. you told me I had better go out and contact Stripe about them mentioning Hast.
That's right.
Which I did. Surprised. Yes,
I am surprised. Now, did you just throw an email off into the ether, or did you like hunt down somebody and like really get?
Well, they actually have a target email for that on their sort of
like the
integrations partners page. Mm-hmm. So they basically told me fuck off in so many words. So I contacted them. And, maybe you guys. Here's the app. Maybe you guys want to mention it in a tweet or something like that, or at least put it up on your integrations page, which has like hundreds of websites and associated apps that use Stripe. Like that's the point of that email address and that web page is, if you're integrating with Stripe, you should be on this list. And they basically, I went through like seven people and six of them basically were surprised as to what I'm approaching them with. One of them got things completely wrong and thought I was asking for some sort of a what is that called, like what you're setting up with the help spot now,
like a reseller
type of a thing. Yeah. And they said, no, we're not doing resale type of thing. And I'm like, did you read the email I just sent to you? So basically I bounced between like six different people, and the last one said, you know what, I'll raise this up and I'll get back to you. And nobody ever got back to me, which it made the whole thing look like they're not used to this type of conversation or used to doing the partnership, which is such BS, because like their front page has Dribbble and Lyft on it and their docs have bare metrics all over them. And there's partnerships and mentions on every page and every documentation page that Stripe has up. So, whatever.
I wonder if it's one of those things where like they've grown so quickly that now, like, you know what I mean? Like those integrations have been there. Like you have the older integrations that somebody cared about the integrations. Like the founder guy was like putting up every single person who it was Stripe, And now it's like nobody's even in charge of that anymore, and it's just some random person, and then you're just getting bounced around.
The person who responded to me and said about, well, we're not doing that. I forgot what it's called. What is it called? The thing with the HelpSpot is doing.
partner, like a partner program, or
like a reseller, affiliate. Yeah, affiliate. So she said, "Well, we're not doing affiliate right now because we're focusing on a new thing with new features, which I guess is Atlas." Yeah. But I understand that you're doing features, but you're not even responding to what I'm. Yeah.
Put my link on the page. Like. You got to write back to them and be like, "Hey, it's been a week. Just so we're clear, all I want you to do is put a link to this thing that's dedicated solely to Stripe, at least currently, on your integrations page because it's integrated and it's desktop, which is unique. You don't have a lot of desktop ones on here. They might even have none." Yada, yada, yada.
If somebody comes out and says, "We don't do that. I'm sorry," or like, "We changed policy," or whatever, or "We're you're nothing to us because you're too small and we're huge now," that's one thing. But if you're just blasting me around six different people pretending not to even know what I'm talking about because I came out of the blue with some weird request that you never heard of before, that's skeezy to me.
But see, I think they're blasting around because nobody knows what to do. Do you know what I mean? That just means they don't know what to do. Like, this is some guy who just got hired 3 days ago and they're like, "Here you go." And he's like, "I don't know what this is." They probably want, you know, something from us, but really just want, like,
whatever. I tried Twitter ads. Again, I try Twitter ads with every product I launch, right. And it's a phenomenal failure that keeps beating the last phenomenal fail. I mean, I tried it for $50. Mm. I got 28,000 impressions. Okay. I wrote down the specs because people like specs. Yeah. Out of the 28,000 impressions, I got 53 clicks at a cost of 94 cents a click and zero downloads. I'm not even talking about signups, zero downloads.
Now, do you download right from the Twitter ad? Like, is there some link where it downloads directly, or they
No, just go the to front the site? Page, yeah.
Yeah. That's not surprising.
It's so weird. I mean, Andy Bryce also had, like, zero success with his Twitter, and I've had zero success with my Twitter ads thing, but
again,
I don't know.
One of the things with these, like, Facebook and Twitter especially, I feel like. So Google, I think, is special. Like, because Google, you could say, somebody's searching for SaaS metrics. Like, you could do that ad, and that's somebody you know is searching for SaaS metrics. And so you could position something to them, and that's a direct thing, which makes sense to sell them directly. But for these other social ones, I just feel like you're hitting people at weird times. You know, you're always going to be hitting people at a point where they're not looking for a SaaS metric solution or a help desk solution. Right? Even though they might be a perfect customer, they're not at that moment thinking about that. And so you end up just throwing this in front of them at a point where they're like in beds, you know, scrolling through ads and or scrolling through the tweets, and this ad pops up and they're like, whatever. So I don't know. I've kind of come around on those to thinking that the better way to use those, and we're going to experiment with this, which is a whole thing we could talk about, but is that you kind of have to have the content marketing end of it, which, you know, I'm eternally with this content marketing, but like, I feel like you might at least have a better chance at getting somebody to sign up for like an email or follow your blog post, like something that's not a commitment to like try a product.
Right.
Like, you get them into that first phase of your ecos, you know, your kind of systems of, hey, you're on a newsletter list. Like, that's all I'm trying to get you. I'm just trying to get you on my newsletter list. And then, you know, over the months that you're sending out newsletters or whatever it is you're doing, drip emails or whatever, like, then you get them at some point, they one of those hits when they're actually in the mindset of thinking about your product, and okay, and you're building up trust with them and all that stuff. That's the only thing I could see. I feel like that's the only thing that really works. Because I know, like, especially for techie people too, I think that's also another factor. I mean, on Facebook, I get all these ads. There's like 17 hats, some thing that keeps blasting me with ads. Like, all these ads, I'm like, I have no interest in ever clicking on any of these ads while I'm in Facebook. Because I'm only in Facebook to look, to post pictures I took, or occasionally to look at other people's pictures. And I couldn't care less about, you know, any of this stuff. So I don't know.
So what I realized later, which is me being stupid because I don't think about this stuff as much as I should, is that nobody sees these ads other than on like the phone version of Twitter.
Yeah.
And nobody's downloading the phone version of Hast because there's no phone version of Hast.
That's true too, yeah.
So even if there are downloads off of that ad later on, or even at the same time, but it's on a desktop, I mean, they're not tracking it. Yeah, so.
I mean, you can look for the blip on your end, but yeah. And those are the kind of things. I feel like you have to spend thousands of dollars too to really test it. You know, it's like, it's so hard to test on like a reasonable budget because you just hit a bad moment or whatever, or weird time, or you have to get that all figured out, like what are the best times and all that stuff. Yeah, and it's only, and they only show in the official Twitter app, which I feel like in our world, like especially for Hast, like
right, people are using Tweetbot.
Yeah, like who's using the regular Twitter client in the geeky SaaS world? Not a lot of people. So that's another downside there for that.
That's all right. It was like zero effort to set up. But it had to go through Anter because it can't go through a new Twitter account either. They won't let you do that. Like you can't set up a How Are Sales Today or whatever on Twitter and then go through that for ads because they want you to be like a long-standing member. Yeah.
What about the – you were thinking about doing some podcast ads. Have you
– I haven't tried it yet. I should. Yeah, I should go ping Eric and do an ad on his show.
I think with those two, it's a similar concept. Like, I think you should try to do like 4 or 5, like spaced out though. You know what I mean?
Right,
like
right.
One every 3 weeks or whatever. Just like, it hits.
Yeah, it's like a presence type of a thing.
Yeah, like more of a branding.
A bunch of stuff. Also, had some trouble with email servers while you were out in San Francisco. Oh,
that's the worst.
So it's not really a technical problem, but it's more like, I don't know, human error? Maybe it is a technical problem. Google disabled forwarding on some of our email addresses.
Mm.
So what happened was that at some point, I didn't like customer service at Anter.com. I wanted to switch to support.
Yep.
And so I went to Google and I just changed it to where customer service just redirects to support. Mm-hmm. And I tested it and it works and it's fine because it's not like rocket surgery. And then I set it up in HelpSpot that it monitors just support and not customer service anymore.
Right.
And everything is fine and everything is peachy. And I'm totally not noticing that my support flow has gone down because I'm just doing such a great job with my products. And like I updated some other places like server-side mailer scripts and somewhere, but our apps have been hard-coded with customer service.
Mm.
So that we need that redirection to work,
right?
Which at some point it stopped because Google turned it off. Because I went back and I checked and it was turned off.
Hmm. Google.
It's like back to September, months.
So now is the email in there or is it gone?
So the email is in there. I turned on HelpSpot. I put in both email addresses to be monitored. Mm-hmm. HelpSpot is like choking. It's like, stop. but in the end, there was only about 30 messages that were impactful out of like thousands.
Right. All this spam.
Yes. I mean, you acknowledge the screw up. You fix it. You move on because it's not about the screw up. It's sort of about the recovery
right.
of the customers. So a few refunds that could have been saved, but you know it could have been worse. So not trusting Google Mail with forwarding addresses anymore.
Yep, that would be that's definitely a recommendation I usually have for this scenario. Is like just set them both up,
right?
In HelpSpot or whatever your tool is, and then. You know, obviously try to change it everywhere, even though the email address is going to like live forever, you know, because it's just in all kinds of weird places, then you're never going to update them all, but try to get as many as you can updated. And then in HelpSpot or your tool of choice, even though you're checking from customer.service, like you can make the reply to the new one so that at least like, okay, it's going to pull in from customer service. But then when you reply from customer service, like their replies back will be the right one. And they'll, you know, if they reply back to, you know, 6 months from now, if they want to email you again, like if they search back, like they'll more likely find newer address, and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. Leaving them both running is usually just the simplest way to avoid. We had something like that too happen once where I wanted to change to using at HelpSpot, like support at HelpSpot.com because we use that Userscape. And I was like, well, it's all HelpSpot support. Like, we should probably just use HelpSpot domain. And I don't know. Everything. Stuff wasn't getting delivered. I don't know if it was some, you know, who knows. I'm pretty good with the email like configuration and SPF records and all this stuff, but something wasn't working right. And so I ended up just reverting to, we still to this day just use at Userscape for everything. But then I left the HelpSpot one in there because we had published it. So we left that in there for like a year until nobody was.
Right. Once it's out, it's out. Yeah. Right.
So that's horrible. That's all these
it
things.
It wasn't pleasant. I only found out about it because a customer yelled at me through our Twitter account. It's like, I emailed you 3 times. Like, you did?
Oh my gosh. There's such a, I have this idea, but I don't really want to talk about it because I don't want it to be out there yet. Even though it's like ideas are worth nothing. It's like this idea I have, but I'll give you the general's idea, which is I feel like there's this market opportunity. We'll talk about the market. Market opportunity for all these products and mobile apps and all these things that sell for such little money per instance in the support space. Do you know what I mean? Because like it's hard for you, like you and many other companies like you, like when somebody's paid you 99 cents for something, it's hard to do support for that. Or even if they paid you $15, it can be hard to do support for that. So like there's something there with like the ability to have a tool that's more dedicated to that specific need. Do you know what I mean? That's different than running a full help desk application.
I see.
With a support staff. You know what I mean? Because like you don't have the money to have a support staff, at least in the kind of early stages. Now, that's the part that makes it a bad market opportunity also, because like, you know, you have to be able to charge enough for a solution to this to make it worth building. But there's something there where I feel like I hit this a lot on the consumer end too, where, you know, most apps just have no support at all, right? Like there's no, you can't find any support. There's no contact. There's no nothing. Because they just don't want to answer emails for an app that costs 79, that they made 79 cents on. So, or they made nothing because it was free, or it's ad supported and they don't know how much they made off you or whatever. So, I don't know. There's something there, but I haven't been able to fully flesh it out and I don't want to get distracted. So it's kind of on my idea pile of things.
I see where your head's at. I don't know anything about the solution to this or the approach, but I see where your head's at.
Yeah. Because it's hard to manage all that stuff, you know, support wise and everything. And the justification is difficult because there's not a lot of money in any one customer. So you're going to spend 2 hours answering this request from one customer. And those build up over time. Like, I'm not even saying you shouldn't be answering all those requests, but there's still like, especially with developers, but even with other people, you know, there's a practical aspect of like, I made 79 cents off you and I'm going to spend 2 hours that I could have been improving something or whatever, with maybe helping you do something. If it's a bug, it's a little bit different because you're getting that feedback and fixing the software for everybody. So that's a little bit different, but if you just have a regular question or different use cases you want to discuss as a customer, like it's hard to make time for those things. So, or even just dealing with feedback, like those kind of things. I don't know.
You know what we got to do? We got to do a sponsor ad.
That's a great idea, Andre. This week, as with every week in our spring season, winter spring, we have our good friends at Linode.
Linode.
Linode, you know, as we've said, we use them. I use them for 12 servers, something like that. I just have every single site we run, its own server. Most of them are on 1 gig servers. They just stay up. They never go down. Runs great. We have a couple bigger servers for some bigger things we do. It's all SSD, super fast networking, all modern hardware, 24/7 support. All kinds, you know, it's hourly billing, so it's great to spin up for little projects or things you want to test out and just try it out for a little bit. You can just spin up a new VM on Linode and kick the tires on an open source framework or something you download that you just want to try, or your own app that you're just want to working on the weekends, for example, and you just want to spin it up on the weekends and spin it down during the week when you don't have time to work on it. All that stuff, super easy, super cheap. I mean, if you're using it just part-time like that, you know, you could do it for a couple bucks a month. Even the whole month of the 1 gig server is just $10 a month. So really affordable, highly recommended. Been using them for years now. And best thing, of course, is that with the offer code bootstrap20, you can get $20 off. So basically 2 full months or more than 2 full months if you only use it hourly for free just by listening to us and our happy commentary. So check that out. You can go to bootstrap.com go to lino.com/bootstrappedfm and use code bootstrap20 when you sign up and get your 20 free bucks. Thanks to Linode.
Thank you. I should do this too.
You should do it.
I always do it. I used to do the other ones, and Linode I'm not doing. I don't know why. Because I don't know any of this technical mumbo jumbo you're talking about. I just run my stuff on Linode and I don't touch it. I just bring it up and that's it.
You don't have to think about it. That's the beauty. All right. You tweeted this week that you had questions about on-premise software.
Let me tell you a story first.
Okay.
I went to Brooklyn while you went to San Francisco.
Okay.
I went to my old stomping grounds.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask if this is Andre Butov's Brooklyn.
This is Butov's Brooklyn.
Okay.
I only go to Butov's Brooklyn. I'm not welcome in proper trendy Brooklyn.
And gentrified.
That's right. So two stories. One is a short one, and one is everything has changed in my old neighborhood in like the 5 years that I've been gone.
Mm-hmm.
At a place where my wife lived where she grew up, also in the same neighborhood where she grew up, every single storefront that was there then is no longer there. Every single one. Like I went around just because I had time to kill. I went around like 4 or 5 blocks and right. just to see what's the same, what's different. Every single one is different except for one. The Mabron Cafe that was there for 30 years that is not actually a cafe because we went there one time and ordered the coffee and they had to run across the street to get milk. and there's still guys there that look like they run a Mabron Cafe right. sitting there, which is fantastic. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't know what business they're doing,
sure.
but as a staple of the neighborhood, I love the fact that the Mabron Cafe is the only one that sticks around after everything else that's gone.
That makes sense.
I don't know that they're a Mabron Cafe. I'm just saying they're a Mabron Cafe.
And was it all for the better or for the worse?
They don't bother anybody.
No, not the
Mob. Oh, the changes?
Yeah.
Just different storefronts.
Okay.
It's not like chains replaced moms and pops. It's just different. But the real story is why I went to Brooklyn. Right. I went to Brooklyn.
I feel like this is a children's book. Like, why Andre Butov went to Brooklyn? Page one.
And I don't want it on a train, and I don't want it in the rain. My iPad Air screen broke.
Okay.
And for a long time, I didn't want to fix it because everywhere around here is like $300. Mm. So I found a place in Brooklyn, in my old stomping grounds, that was like $70.
Okay, what could go wrong?
This is an awesome story. You should be quiet and listen to me. So I went down to Brooklyn. I called them up. I called them up and I asked, and they're like by appointment. They're not like open hours or anything.
Right.
Sure. And I called them up and I said, "Can you send it back to me? Because I'm not gonna be able to. It takes like a day for the glue to set in or something. Mm-hmm. Can you send it back to me? Because I don't want to stick around. I'm only in town for a couple of hours." I said, "Sure, no problem." So I came in. And it's this, and I had trouble finding it. So I found it. And it's this dilapidated pre-war building. It doesn't look like anything. It just looks like a grimy old apartment building
right. That
needs the landlord's attention. And you walk up a flight of stairs and it's off to the side, almost under the stairs, like this room. It's all dark.
Of course.
You walk in there, it's all dark except for like the glow of monitors and various beeps and electronic sounds or anything.
Right.
Dude is sitting behind a desk wearing sunglasses.
Yes.
It's like the Matrix. The guy is surrounded by computers mounted on various arms and mounts. They move closer to him when he beckons for them, and then they move back and glide around him when he dismisses them. There's like 12 keyboards around him. Half of them are glowing. He looks through the gap at the top of his sunglasses, and like he asks me if I want the red pill or the blue pill. No. So he asks me what I want, and I tell him, and then this mounted electronic credit card reader just glides towards me. I think it was basically an iPhone with like a square swiper in it, but
right.
I mean, theatrics and presentation.
Sure.
So I pay for it. My phone buzzes with a confirmation email on a spot before I can put my wallet away. And one of his monitors beeps with the order confirmation. And he just glances at me and smiles and like, we're done here. And it just felt like he's not working at the repair shop. It's like he is the repair shop. Like he's built into the system that is the repair shop. And he's just like this human looking half man, half computer thing that's meant for customers to interact with. Like maybe he doesn't even have a bottom half. It's just the part you see behind the desk at the bottom. It's like all metallic Dr. Octopus tentacles that go out to other parts of the system. And like at the end of the day, he just presses the button and it goes into hibernation and slides into the back wall or something until the next morning. It was amazing. It was like $70. And he did an amazing job, and it showed up in the mail a few days later. It even had one of those peel screens that you get with like new electronics.
Really?
From the store. It was incredible. Just for the experience alone, it was worth it.
And it works?
It's fantastic. It's like a brand new thing. I mean, it's not because it's like still has my, I mean, it's my iPad, but like the screen is brand new.
That seems impossible.
There was another kid who came in to fix his iPhone, and the kid asked him, are you using only like official licensed whatever Apple parts? And he's like, if we don't do Apple parts, we don't do it all. It's fantastic. It's just so good.
Are you buying that or no?
It's fine.
No, I mean, but you believe him.
That it's Apple parts?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't believe
it. I don't care. I'm not paying $300 for it, but I'd gladly pay $70 for the theatrics and the iPad screen.
Yeah, it's crazy what they get for those because, I mean, you could buy a new iPad now. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to fix your two-generation-old iPad for, like, the same price almost as, like, a new iPad. It's kind of silly.
Right. So, yeah, it was a great experience. I really liked it.
You should document it. Snap in some pictures.
Yeah, I have the feeling there's probably like an EMP field around there or something. That shit won't work.
Right. You take your phone out to like the camera's like magically disabled.
That's right.
The radios are all turned off. It's like one of those, what do they call them? Like a Cooper cage or a...
Oh, Faraday cage.
Yeah.
Man, Butov's Brooklyn is a fantastic place.
You got to do the Butov's Brooklyn tour. You just get a little mini bus, drive people around.
I should just periscope my weekly visits to Brooklyn.
Because people think Brooklyn is just like Atlantic Avenue and whatever that other big street is.
Right. People think Brooklyn is what people think of San Francisco when they watch Full House.
Yeah, exactly. It's those two streets. But it's really like it's a huge place. It's like probably three San Franciscos in size or something. Because it goes way out there. It goes all the way down to the ocean.
Yeah. The Brooklyn that people think about is the Brooklyn that's on one side of the Prospect Park, which is like the gentrified hipster Brooklyn. That's a very small part of what Brooklyn is. There's a Brooklyn that's on the other side of Prospect Park. It's like three quarters of Brooklyn, which is all immigrants and their various ways of life. That's the proper Brooklyn.
See, I love this. Is like a very, I'd be curious to know. People should let us know if people from other cities have this same complex, because this is a very New York City phenomenon. And I don't feel like I've heard other people speak this way, because my father is from the Bronx and he's exactly the same as you. So he left the Bronx at like 21. So it's been like 45 years he hasn't been in the Bronx. But he is like, he feels like he was just there yesterday, and he is the Bronx through and through, and he complains continuously about how it's not as like bad and scary as when he was there, and it's not as tough, and he was tough, and his Bronx is the real Bronx, and his new quiche eating people are bogus, and all this stuff. It's the same thing. I wonder if people have this in other cities, or if they're just happy to be out and then they don't think about it that way. They don't wear it as like a badge of honor.
Well, I just mentioned the other day, though, I watched that show that really resonates with me, A Chef's Life. You said you watched that, too.
Oh, yeah.
And the whole promise of that is that she went back to her childhood home where she, like, said when she left, she said she'd never go back again. That's a good show. People should check that out. I guess the PBS show?
Yeah, PBS.
Yeah, Chef's Life. It's a great show.
It's pretty good. It's kind of interesting because you see her evolve into, like, kind of fame.
It's fantastic. And nobody has that early, super early point of getting famous. Like, she's super uncomfortable with it. She's not really famous, that famous, but she's like Today Show and like she's getting up there. And but she's, every time she talks about it, she's like, I don't want to be a phony. I don't want, you know, I don't want to, I don't want my people who work for me thinking I'm a phony celebrity chef because it's a great show.
It's a good show. I never heard of her. We just were like cruising through like the PBS app on the Apple TV and we're like, oh, chef stuff. Just started watching it. But yeah, it's good. And it's kind of an interesting look at the South too, because it like kind of dives in deep on like Southern culture, which I thought was
kind of very centering. There's something about the cinematography. The cinematography on that show like won awards.
Oh, really?
The stuff they do, even like the little ads that play before thing. There's like North Carolina specific ads, like the Vanderbilt mention, and it sets the mood for the entire show. It's like very zen.
It is nice. I do like those ads. That is funny. I actually don't like the intro. I wish the intro was shorter, but I like that ad.
Right. Okay, so I gotta go because I have a little emergency thing. So we have to cut this episode short, but we have a bunch of stuff to talk about. So we'll talk about it next week, I guess. Sorry, guys.
Andre Bussos, he's running out the building.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye. See you next week. Bye.